Probably an issue that is familiar to most everybody in America today, because in fact we understand and talk a great deal about the differences between males and females, sometimes in a particularly humorous way and sometimes in a more serious way. It is a topic of considerable discussion by the cartoonist and by the stand-up comics. Illustrated here, difference, Rose is Rose, and you recognize if you read the comics. How many of you read the comics? Some people have time to read the comics. Now, I love to read the comics, particularly because of the insight they give you into what's important to people and what's on people's minds. And so many times the topic is like this. The husband and wife go to the mall. He sticks his head in, says, "Hi, I'll take that, that, and that. Here's my money. I'm done. I'll wait in the car," he says to his wife. And her response is, "Your speedy selections at the refrigerator are annoying enough." And shopping is certainly a difference that we oftentimes think exists between males and females. My wife says, "It's amazing. You can get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go play basketball. But as soon as we step inside the mall, you begin to complain about your feet hurting. I don't understand that." Well, I understand that. You understand that, Curtis? I understand that perfectly well. Is there a difference between men and women? I think more significantly than the stand-up comics, there is this situation of change that we're undertaking in America. We are engaged in a great social experiment to determine whether or not there will be any significant social changes when we treat men and women the same. It's amazing to me that without really debating the issue, and that seems the way so many things are changed in our culture, without ever debating the philosophical underpinnings, that we're engaged in this social experiment to see if eradicating traditional gender differences is going to make a difference. Do you think that it will make a difference 25 years, 50 years from now? I won't see. Carl won't see the differences. But you people will see those differences in your children and especially in your grandchildren. And then you will say, "Dr. Dickey was right. He understood that." It is a potentially troubling issue, it seems to me. As troubling as any issue that faces America or any other country in Western civilization today. Issues of environment, of classism, of racism, the multicultural issues of our society. Nonetheless, it seems to me the most significant issue that faces us is the issue of gender differences and how the differences in genders are built into our society. And what will happen when we eliminate those gender differences? It seems to me we're talking about, when we talk about gender, differences between males and females, we're talking about something that is fundamental, not just an overlay on top of what people are. The idea has been suggested that we're all people. Some happen to be male-type people, and others are female-type people. The Bible, however, says that God created man in his own image. Male and female created he them. And I think that given the sparsity of language in the Bible and the significance of every word, that that means something, that we are male, we are female. We're not people who happen to be male or female. It's not a trivial thing. There are others who agree with me in that assessment. Nikolai Bredyov, a Russian Christian philosopher, says that the categories of sex, male and female, are cosmic categories, not merely anthropological categories. It's almost impossible to conceive of a language in which there are not gender differences tied up in the nature of language. And you understand in this day and age of sensitivity to feminine issues, the problems that we have when we try and use gender-neutral language, when we try and eliminate the use of he as a generic pronoun, and many of you have been excoriated on your papers for writing about the non-specific person and then using them as a pronoun to talk about this non-specific gender-neutral person. And then they say to you, the English teachers say to you, "But that's not, that doesn't match in number." And you say, "Well, what am I going to do? I can't say he because it may be a female. And to use he slash she surely is artificial." Well, the point is, I think, that we have built into our language an understanding of the significance, the cosmological significance of gender. There is no other issue, I think, that has been so long running. Carol Tavares and Carol Wade, two psychologists, sociologists who have studied this issue for a long time, and you will see their names constantly in this area, Tavris and Wade. And they've written a book called The Longest War, which is about gender differences. No other issue, I think, so significant in affecting our understanding of who we are. Maybe for some people, the issue of racism is as significant. But for most of us, there is no more significant social issue affecting our self-concept than gender issues. And what does it mean to be male, and what does it mean to be female? And what does it mean to be male vis-a-vis females, and female vis-a-vis males? What does it mean? By the time a child's 3 or 4 years old, they have built in, already permanently, a gender role that they're going to live out the rest of their lives. So one of the first things that children will ask, you understand, when they visiting with you, and I always enjoyed for a number of years before I got married. I didn't get married till I was 30, and for a number of years I traveled around the country and go to various congregations, and I always enjoyed talking to the children there. And what was really enjoyable about it was that they were puzzled oftentimes by me. And they would say, where's your mommy and your daddy? Or they would say, where are your children? From their point of view, you either have to have children or you have to have a mommy and a daddy. You can't just be wandering around that in-between state. And the other question they always want to know about people, male or female, boy or girl, do you like boys, do you like girls? They're interested in gender, and they want to identify gender right away. My children grew up, of course, and are growing up in a culture in which sometimes the address makes it hard to identify, and that's always puzzling to them. Is it a boy or girl? They want to know. Of course, I remember my dad asking that same question when he visited me at an FSU campus back in 1960s. It is an issue of long-standing debate then. Even the feminists have debated the issue of whether or not there are significant differences between males and females. On the one hand, feminists have suggested that there are no differences and that men and women ought to be paid the same for equal work, that men and women ought to equally have the vote, that men and women ought to have equal educational opportunities, that they ought to have equal access to the power and the resources of our society. And yet, there is a sense of a thread running through feminist literature that says, wait a minute, you men have messed it up. Women would have done better if they had had the opportunity. There's the sense somehow that women have skills that men don't have. The idea often expressed, not so very subtly, is that there would have been no wars, no world wars, if women had been in charge. It's the men who are too aggressive and start the wars over trivial things and aren't able to work it out. Sometimes you hear that in the workplace, that female managers have extra skills that males don't have, that female managers are able to be facilitative. And in some ways, I observe in our society, in schools and in businesses, that we are moving toward a more feminine kind of society, that the skills of empathy and understanding are becoming more important. And those traditionally have been female kind of skills, that competition and assertiveness and aggressiveness that were traditionally male kinds of skills are becoming less useful. That's even true in the modern kind of marriages that we have, the egalitarian kinds of marriages that we have in America and that everybody wants, revolve primarily around the ability to communicate, to understand, to be empathetic. And those are skills that women have had for generations. But men still trying to develop those skills that make a marriage work. That's why so often the complaint today to marriage counselors is, we don't ever talk. He doesn't understand me. Women have those skills. Men are now, I think, beginning to need to learn those skills. But are there differences? Some of the feminists say that there are, some say they're not. Germaine Greer, for instance, the Australian feminist, writes that every mother who has held a girl child in her arms has known that she was different from a boy child and that she would approach the reality around her in a different way. She is a female, she will die a female, and through many centuries she will remain a female. Archaeologists would identify her skeleton as the remains of a female creature. That to emphasize that there's a difference between men and women. On the other hand, Naomi Weistein, and if you ever see that name, here is hardcore radical feminist, in an article entitled, well, I won't give you the title of it, Psychology Today, October 1969. Go look it up yourself and enjoy the title in the privacy of the library. Except for their genitals, I don't know what immutable differences exist between men and women. Perhaps there are some other unchangeable differences. Probably there are a number of irrelevant differences. But it's clear that until social expectations for men and women are equal, until we provide equal respect for both sexes, answers to this question simply reflect our prejudices. That is the question that I'm here to try and answer for you. Are there gender differences? She says there are probably only irrelevant differences aside from our prejudices. Can we answer this question in any significant way? Are men and women different? If so, how much, how important are these differences? Every society seems to have recognized that there are differences between men and women. Every society that you can explore has some kind of sex typing, some kind of gender typing. That is, they have certain things that are women's work, certain things that are men's work. Now, the interesting thing about that is, if you look at particularly primitive cultures, which are some ways more interesting than our own because they're different than modern industrialized cultures. But if you look at primitive cultures, what you will discover is that the skills and the jobs sometimes that are associated with females in one society are associated with males in the other. For instance, pottery, very significant part of many primitive cultures. And in about half of the primitive cultures, it's a male task. In about half of them, it's a female task. One of the things that you may observe about that, however, is that if it's a male task, you can be sure that pottery is valued. They put it up on the shelf, they admire it, how wonderful it is. Broken pottery is treated with respect. If it's a female task, pottery gets trod underfoot. Nobody pays much attention to it. That's pretty typical in our anthropological studies of cultures, that in fact there is always gender typing in every culture. And furthermore, that in general, women's work is less valued than men's work. In fact, I almost hear that. How many of you hear that when you say women's work? I mean, it's kind of hard not to say that with a sneer for a man growing up in essentially a sexist society. Women's work is different than men's work. We understand that's the case. Despite this, there are no evidences of the great and famous Amazon tribe. There is no evidence that there's ever been a tribe of women who have excluded men and have held the power in their society. There are some societies, some tribes in which there has been more equality than others, but there is no anthropological evidence, acceptable anthropological evidence, of female-dominated societies. There's this kind of feminist mystique that somewhere way back in the dim past, there was a time in which women dominated society, the great matriarchal society, some kind of Eve in Eden ruling. But there's no evidence for that. I mean, it's only speculation on their part, and substantial surveys of the data available to us will provide, as Queen Habenstein and Adams do in their survey, the conclusion that in most of the cultures about which we have information, women are clearly subordinate to men. There is traditional view in our Western culture about male and female differences. And the traditional stereotypes are men are aggressive, reliant, self-reliant, competitive, they are emotional, they are reasonable and logical. Women, on the other hand, are emotional, sensitive, caring, affectionate, dependent, subordinate. Lord Chesterfield, to his son in 1748, wrote, "Women are only children of a larger growth. They have an entertaining tattle and sometimes wit, but for solid reasoning and good sense, I never knew one that had it or who reasoned or acted consequentially for 24 hours at a stretch." 1748. Today, of course, we have a slightly different perspective, as demonstrated by the bumper sticker that I saw a couple of days ago on the back of a car with a female driver, of course, and the bumper sticker said, "So many men, so few brains." It is, you know, it's not an uncommon theme in our society now to think of men as being, yeah, they're still kind of self-reliant and they're still aggressive, but somehow they're sort of bumbling, too. and that women have to take care of them. I think that begins in the media with maybe great favorite Ozzie and Harriet. And in that, Ozzie Nelson always has some scheme that goes awry, and it's necessary for his wife and his children to bail him out and protect him. There are perhaps some evidences that we can put together here about the differences between males and females. And just quickly, I'd suggest to you three types of gender data we can pay attention to. Actually, why do I say three when I have four here? That's just to keep you on your toes here. There are four types of gender data we can pay attention to. Physiological data, psychological data, the cultural anthropological data, and the socio-historical. That's biology, psychology, anthropology, and sociology. And if I had more room in there, I could put some other ologies too, I suppose. But I want to look at the data in these three different areas. First of all, the physiological gender data, with which most of you are familiar. It is obvious that there are some physiological differences between males and females, and it begins at the point of conception. Many of you understand that at the point of conception, we have the merging of two sets of genes. Half of the genetic material from the mother, half of the genetic material from the father combined together. That's brought about by, of course, the special cells in the body, the sperm in the body of man, the ovum in the body of the woman, that are made up of split apart chromosome pairs. Every cell in your body, except for these special cells, have 23 pairs of chromosomes. And these special cells have one half. They have half of these 23 pairs. And there's a special set of chromosomes called the XY chromosomes. And in the XY chromosome pairing, we have the key to maleness and femaleness. That is, if the two pairs are both X chromosomes, then we have a female. If one of them is a Y chromosome matched with an X chromosome, then it produces a male as that fetus begins to develop. And of course, there are some differences that result from this chromosomal pattern. Obviously, you may get from your mother your blue eyes or from your father your brown hair, regardless of whichever sex that you are. But the fact that there is a Y chromosome in the male and an X chromosome in that place in the female produces some hormonal differences in the fetus. Principally, the Y chromosome is going to produce testosterone, massive amounts of testosterone, 20, 30, 40 times as much testosterone is produced in the female fetus, which does a couple of very significant things. And, you know, one of the sad things is that it slows down development. That's a problem for males. Problems show up in a number of different ways. For instance, there's a higher mortality rate for male fetuses than there is for female fetuses. There's a higher mortality rate for male infants than there is for female infants. Of course, on the other hand, the Y chromosome sperm as opposed to the X chromosome sperm are faster, so that there are more initially male fetuses. But they have a higher mortality rate, so by the time we're talking about infants 2 or 3 years age, there's about equal number, males and females. But the difference in the testosterone levels of the males and females makes a considerable difference in the ultimate outcome: body size, upper body strength for males, greater than that for females, higher metabolic rate for males than for females. There are these kind of differences. Do they make differences that are important, however, for society? That's the question. I mean, nobody doubts, noted in chapel, that men can grow facial hair and women can't. But does that make a difference? Is that important? Or are there some important differences that arise from these chromosomal hormonal differences? Well, the slower developmental rate of the male certainly makes a difference, I think. It is apparent, if you have ever observed males and females in the primary grades, kindergarten, first and second grade, that males develop the fine finger skills necessary for reading, writing, and all those other academic pursuits that are built on that at a much slower rate. Males develop much more slowly those skills in females. Generally, females are going to walk sooner, they're going to talk sooner, and that difference seems to only be finally overcome by males by the time we reach the mid or later teen years. Most glaring, of course, in the early primary grades. I had that brought home to me when my children started school. My oldest boy went to school, kindergarten, preschool, first grade, and, you know, he's a real good student, and I'm very proud of him, but he is a boy, after all, and has the boy kind of problems at school. And I remember what those boy kind of problems were. I had tried to forget it. I had blocked it out, but when he started coming home, and I would see those papers, you know, they have those papers with the big lines on them, and they have those little chubby pencils, and I would see those papers, you know, with the black smudge marks on them. It all came back to me with horrifying clarity of the struggle to try and make those. And I asked him one day, I said, you know, how are you doing at school? He said, I'm doing okay. And I said, you've been getting in trouble? No, me and Blade, we've been okay. That was his buddy. Me and Blade, we're okay. And I said, anybody else get in trouble? And he said, well, some of the boys get in trouble. He said, but the girls don't get in trouble. I said, the girls don't get in trouble? He said, no, the girls always do everything just right. And I remember that too. I did. The girls always have that penmanship, and they always are. And that's not true completely. But in general, girls have an easier time with academic skills at that age than boys do. And that makes you wonder a little bit about this significant issue. I said earlier that the great issues of our day and the changes that we make, we never debate the philosophical underpinnings of them, and I've never discovered the debate about coeducation. It seems that in America, coeducation occurred simply because it was an economically feasible thing to do. But it's clear that there are different rates at which males and females progress through those kinds of skills. And to put males and females in the classroom together at the same time is going to produce some kinds of results. I'm not sure what kinds, but in my estimation, what you produce is a sense among males that exists in our culture that somehow schoolwork is sissy. Because we have two facts that the boys have to put together. In our sexist culture, boys are taught that, in fact, they're supposed to be better than girls. Now, girls, you don't like that, I understand, but that's the way boys think pretty much in our society still. Clearly was the case when I was growing up that we thought we were better than girls. And I dare say that you go to any kindergarten, any first grade in this state or any other state, and you poll them about that, and you'll find that the boys think that way. I mean, you can ask the question among the girls, how many of you wish you were a boy? And you'll find some girls who will say, yes, they, you know, boys have all the fun. You ask the boys, how many of you wish you were girls? And you will be met, I think, probably with a negative reaction pretty much by those boys. It's a horrifying thought to think that you might have been born a girl. That's a frightening thing to a boy. And they have this concept that they're supposed to be better, and then there's this other thing is that they're probably not as good at schoolwork in the first grade and kindergarten, second grade as the girls are. Now, how do you explain that? They've got a problem, but they're real clever. Boys may not be, you know, as advanced academically as girls at this age, but they're still clever and they figure it out. Schoolwork is sissy work. And a lot of boys carry that attitude with them right on through school. We have a tremendously high dropout rate among males, particularly among macho male subcultures in our society. Why do we have such a high dropout rate of males versus females? There are probably a lot of factors, but one important factor is this, that males perceive of schoolwork as being sissy. And especially that's true among the macho subcultures in our society, those ethnic groups which have very keen sense of the subordinate position of females, which I think argues that there are some damages of putting males and females together in the classroom based on this difference in developmental rate. Another issue that arises here is the difference in the brain structure. That because of the difference in the developmental rate and because of the presence of testosterone, that the brains of males and females are discernibly different. There are two or three notable differences. And there was a color photo on the front page of the New York Times 2 weeks ago. An MRI scan of a male and a female brain. Magnetic resonance imaging of the brain performing a task, a reading task. Man and a woman are doing the same thing, and they do an MRI scan of the brain, which essentially is a measure of the location of electrical activity. And there's clearly a difference in the way in which those two brains are performing the same task. The essential differences are these: that female brains are much less specialized, that they incorporate much more of the cortex of the brain in any single task, particularly a verbal task, than do males. When males are doing a verbal task, it's localized primarily to the left temporal lobe where language is located. Females use that left temporal lobe plus the entirety of the rest of the cortex to interpret that verbal information. Does that have anything significant to say to us about men and women? Some people suggest this is irrelevant, but it also is suggested that there are some real significant differences here. That in fact, women are better able to incorporate information together and to reach conclusions about verbal exchanges. Why is it that women prefer talking things out and men sometimes feel at a disadvantage in talking things out? It's because women probably are incorporating more of the cortex of the brain in analyzing and understanding verbal exchanges. That's one of the reasons why we have this kind of myth about women's intuition, I think, that women probably are able to better understand a conversation with somebody by looking at their facial expressions, listening to the tone of their voice, and listen to the words. They're able to put all that together and come up with conclusions that men just are not going to reach, at least not as quickly. Many husbands will make the observation about their wife that on occasions, they've met this person, salesperson perhaps, or potential acquaintance, and they come away with two very different conclusions about this person. Wife right away says, can't trust that person, better be careful about that person. Husband says, I don't see that. And then very often they are surprised perhaps to discover that it takes them a while longer, but they reach the same conclusion that their wife reached earlier. Why? Intuition. Maybe because of the way in which the brain is different and able to incorporate more of the cortex into analyzing particularly verbal exchanges. On the other hand, one of the things that results from this differential specialization of the brain is, I think, what occurs in IQ tests. That is, an IQ test, males and females score essentially the same. There's no superiority to one or the other on average IQ scores. But what you may observe is that women in general are going to score higher in verbal categories of intelligence testing. Males score higher in terms of mathematical aspects of test, and particularly higher in spatial aspects of intelligence testing. That's because, as far as we were able to ascertain, mathematical spatial skills were located in the right hemisphere. And because the male brain develops more slowly, the potential for using mathematical or spatial information develops in this specialized way in the right hemisphere, and they have access to that. Because the female brain develops much more rapidly and they develop language much sooner, that language capability kind of takes over both the left and the right hemisphere, and they're much more skillful at that, but they lose out maybe a little bit in terms of spatial skills. One of the things that is a constant amazement to some men is to drive down the highway. And of course, you know, this probably is changing too, but the traditional thing is the man drives and the wife reads the map. And of course, that leads to innumerable arguments. The wife is reading the map and the husband says, should we turn up here? Where should we turn? Driving along, and the wife is looking at the map and she figures this out and says, we should have turned back there. And he is irate, of course, about that because she ought to be able to read the map. Well, I think those things are probably a little bit overdrawn, but it is clear that there are differences in the brain structure. Do they make much difference in the way people behave in their day-to-day life? That's a mood issue. We have to discuss maybe a little more about some other areas of differences. physiological differences. There are also some psychological differences that exist between males and females, that is, behavioral, psychological differences that we can measure in not only this culture, but also in other cultures. Now, one of the questions that we ask is not, are there differences in males and females? Everybody acknowledges that males and females behave differently. I mean, you can walk into this room, look around, and you have no doubt when you look at the people in this room, these are males, these are females. You have a pretty good idea what to expect, and you will react differently to a person based on whether they're male or female. But the question that we're asking very often is it innate? Is it inevitable? Or is it something that we have trained males and females to do? Have we just socially impressed a certain kind of behavior on males and socially impressed a certain kind of behavior on females? Or is it inevitable? It goes back to that question about the Bible account in Genesis of creation. Male and female created he them. How significant is that difference in male and female creation? It's clear that there are differences. Our question is, what differences do we absolutely have to agree are innate? And psychologists and sociologists have analyzed a long list of differences that exist between males and females. And despite the, I think, effort in our current society to make light of any differences, everybody has